I am unashamed. What about you?
So one of our listeners sent this picture.
Wow.
I'll hold it up for y'all to see. You see that, Dan?
Big Al and Kenneth Greenfield.
Kenneth Greenfield. And
I look like a Jason.
Well, that's so the title of the email was, look at how much Phil looks like Jace, or I guess Jace looks like Phil.
Yeah.
Because it looks a lot like him.
Was this before or post?
This was before.
Pre-conversion.
That was pre-conversion, but not long before. I mean, that was probably pretty close right there, because I would guess you were by then. You're
pretty close.
27 or so.
3 years.
See it.
So I also sent a picture, so you can take a look at that. So I thought it was interesting because that's what it said, and it does look a lot like Jace. And there's a couple other pictures Mom has that where Jace looks like Dad a lot. And I think everybody has a different points of their life. But what I thought was interesting was that Zach's, they just wrapped production on the movie, The Blind, where a lot of this era of Dad's life is in the movie.
Yeah.
And Big Al is in the movie, like not – he's dead, but
and he's got that same mustache. Now
see what he looked like.
Yeah, our Big Al was a little thinner, but he's got that same mustache. Is that a Ford truck in the back, Phil?
Yeah, Ford Bronco, probably.
Ford Bronco.
Ford. I think we had a 72 Ford, not Bronco, but F-150.
It's the truck.
Well, it's funny as we get to talking about the more stories that I'm hearing, and I know we had all the interviews before we did the movie, but man, every time Phil tells the stories, my reference point in the images in my mind that are popping up are what we filmed. And I think we had a little bit of creative liberty, but I mean, this thing is pretty accurate.
Pretty much as it went down.
Almost some of it's like word for word. And you're going to be, as Phil was telling the stories this morning and during the interview, I was just sitting there thinking that we've got literally that word for word.
So the Big Al who was converted later, which is not in the film because that was.
No, it'll be in the, we'll share that obviously because when you're going to develop an attachment with this character. And so we want people to know, what happened in the end because he's very likable in the film.
So
very likable.
We're filming a lot of, I guess, what would you call behind-the-scenes stuff and interviews and stuff. In fact, tonight we're going to get together and just as a family and, pray over the whole project and worship, about it.
So we're filming. Everybody's going to meet tonight over at Willie and Corey's, and we're going to have dinner, which is going to be good, although I'm trying to eat right. I showed up at
I saw a big pile of meat. So Willie commissioned Jay, who's now kind of, I guess, the family, meat man, and he to go over and go through his freezers and get whatever he wanted to cook for tonight. And so I saw Wagyu brisket. I saw, Wagyu tenderloins. I mean, it's going to be a meat fest tonight.
Be a feed. So some of the kids are going to lead worship, Mia and Layla and Max, which, by the way,
they're so talented.
Yeah, Layla, we'll talk about this later. She just got signed on with Sadie. Sadie's going to be releasing a worship initiative through her ministry called Live Original. And Layla's going to be one of the lead vocalists on their worship album.
Really? I didn't know that.
So she's in town recording. So Sadie's on fire. So I'm like, you know what? And I told Layla, I said, if you can have a time to spend with just her speaking into you and mentoring you, that alone's worth it. She's a godly woman.
Well,
women prophesying, Sadie, we're raised quite in the crew here.
Well, it's really interesting because people ask me this all the time, it's a great question. They say, was the family nervous about going national with your family and having cameras and all this? And I was like, well, yeah. And mainly because other than my kids who were already grown, but all my brother's kids, they were teenagers and under. And so of course we were nervous about it. I mean, we're watching other families. I mean, albeit probably not godly families. I don't know. I don't judge them. But, fly apart because of being famous, because they make money, they get fame, whatever, or get to drugs or just lives ruined, because of this. So that was our fear and our prayer was that God would keep our, especially our young family, young kids intact, you know, through the process of yeah. becoming well-known. And I have to say, the prayers worked, because when I, like you said, when I look at the next generation of Robertsons and Dashers and all of our family, I mean, you talk about talented, love the Lord, gifted to do different things and using their gifts, you know, to impact other people. So, I mean, praise God, it wasn't us, it was Him that did it. But we have been extremely blessed, I feel like, Dad, with your, now it's your grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and to watch the adults they're turning into. It's incredible. And I've told the story before. I told it yesterday in my sermon again, that, you know, one of the greatest moments for me personally was to have my dad baptize my granddaughter, you know, in our pool. And I just, because I just, we were all there and we were singing and standing around the hot tub. And I just thought, man, this is what it's all about. This is four generations
full circle moment
of faith. Yeah.
And then she won an award at her school.
Yeah.
For being
Most Christ-like.
Most Christ-like.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Which is incredible. And, you know, and she's had some struggles a little bit, you know, in her high school years and teen years. But she's just, I mean, her heart is, she loves the Lord and it's evident. And
she's a sweet girl.
And now she's dating little Joey, you know,
Jersey Joe's
son, and which has been great, because it's a family that moved here from New Jersey. They just, you know, they watched the podcast and listened. They watched, then they went back and watched Duck Dynasty. They never watched it. And they thought, you know what? I don't like living in New Jersey, this blue state. They're making us, you know, all this tyranny.
Get out of here.
They said, let's go to Louisiana.
So
they
came in through the podcast first,
right.
And then they found out about Duck
Dynasty. That's right. They had never, and so watched it. And by the way, that's a phenomenon, Zach. I'm talking to more and more people in my travels.
They're smart.
They knew the podcast was first. Then they went back and watched the series.
You know they're smart, because Jersey Joe's boy spotted one of these little redneck girls happened to be in our family's church. And he said, man, that kind of women are hard to find.
That's right. Well, he had never dated that much, is what Joe told me. But it was really interesting, because he had which we were laughing about this. I was talking to Joe yesterday, and he said, you know, because he wanted to be, his original thing was he wanted to be a Navy SEAL. You know, he's a very driven young man, and he's into, you know, physical fitness and all that. But so he was going to be a Navy SEAL, and I said, whew, boy, that's, I mean, God bless you, because if you make that, these are the toughest people on the planet as a Navy SEAL.
Those guys are a different breed.
They are. But look, now, after a few months of dating Carly, you know, there's a lot of talk about, well, you know, deputy sheriff. So all of a sudden it's like, he's kind of chastised. Well, women will do that. They'll change your perspective and your dreams. But anyway, I just thought that was interesting. That picture, thinking about, you know, in this movie about going back. Cause I tell a story. Dad said one time when we were speaking somewhere, someone said, well, Phil, could you, cause we were speaking at multiple services, and they were wanting him to go a little more personal about his backstory, and which Dad doesn't do a lot. And so Dad looked over at me and he said, Al tells my story way better than I do. And it really is true. When Dad and I used to speak out a lot, I would intro and sort of tell the story, and then Dad would come in and just tell the story of Jesus. And so it was a good 1-2 punch, I felt like, Dad, all those years that we were speaking to all those audiences. And I still do it, because now I tell the story about the family. And so, but I'm most excited about this movie, Zach, for one thing, is when you first approached us with the idea, is that I told Dad this. I said, Dad, do you realize how many people in the history of humanity, we're talking all the way back, as long as there's been people, have ever had a movie made about part of their life? I mean, it's a select, small group of people in the history of human beings that have ever had either an interesting, a nefarious, whatever life that somebody would want to make a movie about it that other people might watch. Mm-hmm. And so I said, that's something right there. And then the other thing is, long after we're gone, this movie will still be around. There'll be different ways they can download it and watch it, but people will be aware of what God did in your life for, you know, however long till the Lord comes.
They may label that as misinformation.
They might. Well, you're right. They may try to block it out.
Yeah, I think that's why I think that I'm so excited about the film is that it's going to be, when we did all the interviews, and I keep hearing like the same words pop up about the film. It's gritty, raw. My favorite one is honest. It's honest. And I think when you, when people see this, because Phil doesn't talk. I mean, he preaches the gospel everywhere he goes. He didn't get into the, you know, the nuts and bolts of the story. But what's the verse in Revelation that they were saved by the blood of the Lamb? And
Revelation 12:11.
Power of their testimony.
Yep.
And I think about that. I think about what this film is. The blind. It is Phil and Kay's testimony.
Yep.
Is this, because it's not just about Phil either. It's about Kay as well.
Right.
I mean, if anything, it's as much her story as his. And you see, when people come to watch this film, I would tell you this: if you have a spouse, particularly if you're one of our female listeners, or maybe a son, or if you have a young male in your life that you think he's never going to step foot inside of a church building, and he's not in a good spot, that's the guy. You trick them. That's what you do. You set them up, and you trick them, and you go. When this film comes out in 10 months or whenever it comes out, you take them to this movie, because what you're going to find is anyone who watches this that says I've gone too far, there's no hope for me, they're gonna leave this film inspired.
Yeah.
And the way that we filmed it, I think, was brilliant, and it wasn't really my idea. It was the director, and at first I was kind of against it. It's a lot of flashbacks.
Yeah.
But the film's so heavy that it actually works so well, because there's a lot of humor. Like with the teenage years, and you see a different version of Phil than the dark side of Phil when he was in his worst. And I like that, because it continues to tie us back to the humanity that you know, Phil wasn't, he was a bad guy for a period, but I mean, when he's a young guy, you weren't doing all that.
It's the same style of film that Gibson used in The Passion, you remember?
Yeah.
Because it was the passion itself of Jesus was so heavy and burdensome, even though you know the story so well because we've studied it our whole lives, but to watch it the way he filmed it, that he would do those flashbacks to when he was younger and when he was with his mom, and just to give you a minute to breathe.
Yeah.
You know, so I've always thought he was brilliant for filming that movie that way, because when you were watching it, you needed that.
You got to have that. It's not as intense as The Passion of Christ.
Right, right, right.
Which is intense, but it is raw, it's real, but it's also full of hope. I showed a trailer to a group in San Diego a few days ago, and of course I'm telling the story, I'm doing the presentation, and there's a voiceover in the trailer of the character that plays my mom, and she's ministering to Kay in the film, and I don't know why, because I've seen the trailer like 6 times. Well, I'm about to go up and talk, and then I start crying. I'm like, uh-oh, this could be good or bad, you know, but I start crying just thinking about, not just that I miss her, but just how I was thinking about like her purity and her love for God, and not just that, like, really, she had a prophetic word about you. And you said it today. She said, she told old Will Smith, if you convert my brother, if you bring him to Jesus, then he will bring thousands to Jesus.
And that's exactly what's happened.
And that's what happened. So I get up there and I basically tell that story, and I look out. Of course, before I even said it, I look up, and I'm not the only one crying. I mean, everybody's crying, and the whole room, we're all crying. Many people are crying. And then when we were filming this one particular scene in the movie, I'm not gonna tell you what it was, because I don't want to. It's such a powerful scene. But there's a character. There's a person on a movie set that we called Scripty, and her role in she sits there and she watches every single take, and she has an iPad where she's notes of any discrepancy up. There's her hair's over here, or the last cut it was over here. Her job is to look at the details. That's all she does. I'm just here to look at details, make notes. She's zoned in. She's in a chair, you know, 16 hours a day looking at a screen. Oh. I mean, it's the worst job. I couldn't do it. You know,
that just makes me cringe thinking about it. Let's take a break. So, Zach, I don't know if, have you tried Tommy John underwear?
I've got them on right now.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. I'm so glad you're part of the group. We love our Tommy John underwear.
Oh, by the way, I meant to tell you this. Speaking of Tommy John's, the story that Jace told on the podcast a while back of Missy having a a mishap, a double barrel mishap at the airport.
Yep, yep, yep.
So one of the casualties was her Tommy Johns.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So she said, make sure that you get me some more Tommy Johns.
All so, I know is I got wow out of my wife as I walked by. I'm like,
And it probably been a while since you got a wow out of mine.
40, 50 years.
So if you want to get a wow.
That's not in the sales pitch, but I mean, hey, yeah.
If you want
a wow out of my woman.
You want to get a wow. 17 million pairs have been sold. So obviously people love Tommy John underwear. You can, and it's risk-free because they've got a Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear. It's free. So, but you're going to love them. So here's what you do. You go to TommyJohn.com/Phil, and you're going to get up to $30 off the site. So it's really great. Plus, you're going to get free shipping. So that's TommyJohn.com/Phil. $30 off the whole the site-wide, plus free shipping. TommyJohn.com/Phil. See site for details.
Yeah, so Scrippy, she's sitting there. Called her Scrippy. Her name's Kristen. So she's doing her job. I'm sitting in the chair behind her, and I'm watching this one scene unfold. Well, I mean, there were several times in the filming that I cried. Just like, so there's just one.
I'm going to be a basket case watching this movie.
Oh, it's going to be.
I can already tell.
Yeah, the family.
I mean, I was there, by the way. I mean, I was really there when it all happened. Well, so I told the director, he said, man, I appreciate you guys, you know, letting us tell your story. And I said, well, it was a lot harder to live in than it is to film a movie about it.
Well, the one that made me, this particular scene, it's actually, you're in it. So I won't tell you anything else about it. But it's your character as a young child. And man, I start crying and I'm tearing up and I'm kind of embarrassed a little bit. So I wipe my tears up and I look down. I'm thinking, oh, I said, I hope nobody sees me. Well, I look at Scrippy. Oh, Scrippy's just like, I mean, just sobbing. Wow. I look up.
So even in her moment of
monotonous,
whatever, it touched her.
It touched her. And then I look around the room and a lot of them were crying. And it was a moment of hope. That's the thing.
That's what you want.
I think what people are going to see, and the one word that you're going to lead this movie with, is hope. That's it.
Yeah. That's good. That's inspiring.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
going to be good.
That's what's inspirational. Well, it was, it's funny, Zach, you said that, because yesterday, I knew I was going to talk a little bit about the film in my sermon. And so as I was sitting there, and I just, always when we're worshiping together, I kind of fade in and out of participating and then just kind of letting it shower over me. Because, you know, when you preach the word of God, I mean, you're his spokesman. I mean, I've always taken that very seriously because, you know, I mean, I'm speaking on behalf of the Almighty God. And so I want the Holy Spirit to be fully engaged and it not be me. But as I was sitting there yesterday, Dad, I was there, you know, at our church, Wise Ferry Road, and I knew I was going to be talking about that film. And I mean, I was just overcome with emotion, even before I got up, just thinking about that was, this church is the one that embraced us, you know? And so when I talked about it, I told the church, I was like, and you're in it. I said, you're in this film because you were there, you know, this church was there. And so I know there's a church service scene. And I was like, you guys were there the whole time. And then I mentioned some names of people because I told the story, Dad, about, which we've told on the podcast before about, because I talked about the resurrection, about you basically hiding out down here away from your influences for a few months because you're trying to, like...
It's about a year.
Yeah, trying to be strengthened. And the first time somebody shows up and is like, hey, let's take a ride down the road, you know, a year later. And Dad's like, you're looking for the wrong Phil. He died. The one you're looking at here is new,
which is a shocking line. They probably were like,
"Oh, I didn't know what happened." But in my story, I pulled a Jace. I was like, and down the road they went because that guy is a crackpot now.
It scared him.
Well, that would scare anybody. But I mean, it's kind of a weird thing to say. It's true.
It's true.
It's brilliant how you put it. But it's I like to say.
So that. My point was because I was. Using the phrase crack pot, which was the jars of clay. And so I kind of took that word and ran this narrative. And so that's why I was saying about Dad. I said, a lot of people from his former life thought he was a kook now. He's just some religious nut. I don't know what's happened to Phil. But then through the years, you were able to go back, including with Big Al and a lot of others, and share Jesus with him. And so all of a sudden that crack pot was really just a cracked pot because you were a jar of clay that God was shining his light through you.
So after about 15 years, they all my old ex-running buddies all came together saying, basically, he gone.
That's right.
He's out.
He's out.
Unreachable.
Right. Which is what you needed. Which well, by
one of them stepped out.
Yep.
Received the gospel. Once he saw what it was all about.
Yep.
Death came near. Doctors, when it came down to death, the same ones who had deserted me, and I had deserted them, one of them said, "What did that?"
Yeah.
He finally said, "What's the story?"
Yeah.
Well, I told him the story. He was driving down on that old Bronco of his, and I told him the story. He said, "I said, you're an atheist. What do you think?" I said, "You could go at any minute." And he said, "That's what I have just now come into grips with." He said, I could die at any time. Aneurysm near my heart. So I baptized him. 2 months later, he dropped dead.
Yep. And you spoke at his funeral.
And I was standing there when he's in the casket, and I'm speaking to the town, brought my reputation with me, as rough as it was. And all of them are sitting there.
I wish we'd had that on film. Mm.
They asked me to speak, and I said, well, I don't know about that. I don't even have a suit. And most people at funerals have a suit. I said, but I don't own one. They said, don't worry about it. Just do it.
You were still a little fearful about preachers and all that, even back in those days, because you were barely new.
Yeah. And I spoke to the whole town about when Al died, in their mind, but my words to them was, I said, see that casket right there, old Big Al's in there? I said, I'll see him again.
Yep.
That's how I ended it. They all cried.
He was a very famous person in that area because he was a very successful baseball coach. He'd won a bunch of state championships. So the whole town would have
been an atheist his entire life.
Yeah, because he was a biology guy. So
until 2 months before his death, he said, okay. So he cut it. That's cutting it thin.
You know what he was? Remember that parable of Jesus and the workers? He was the guy that came in the last hour.
That's it.
But he still got the same thing we all get.
I shall see him again.
But you know, Zach, you mentioned that a minute ago, but it's really interesting since Dad brought that up, that one thing you don't find in atheism is hope. There is no hope.
Not there.
There's no hope for that.
Nope.
You just got the end of the line and the hole in the ground.
There's no hope. And it's funny because I was going to the airport yesterday, and I heard this guy say, he was on the phone, and he was so mad. When you're in the airport, you always hear like men having and women having business conversations on their Bluetooths, and at first you think they're talking to you, then you turn around and realize, oh, wait, they got an earpiece in. And because I heard the guy just say, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, it makes no sense. And he's sitting there ranting about whatever was going on. Like, he didn't understand it, and it made no sense. And I was thinking, you know, it's interesting that as humans, the two things that we look for in life are we want things to make sense. I mean, no matter what setting you're in, you know, if someone disagrees with you or does a bonehead move, what do you say? This doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
Because we're geared to find meaning and make meaning out of the world.
Yep.
And then the other thing is we want significance and value. You know, we want to matter. Even on the matter side, even if you matter for something bad, it's still like, you think, why do these people shoot up these schools? Why do these mass killers? Like, why would someone do that?
They want to be remembered, even in infamy.
Even if it's something horrible,
They're
like, I want something in me, I have to matter. And there has to, which relates to meaning.
Yep.
There has to be a meaning to all this.
Right.
And I'm sitting there thinking about that. I'm thinking, you know, another thing that atheism, it does not give you. It doesn't give you a context for meaning.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't. And it doesn't give you a context for the value of human life. It doesn't give you, like, we go on pretending that life matters, but if you're an honest atheist, there is, Richard Dawkins is right when he says that the sole purpose for our existence is to propagate one's DNA. Ironically, Richard Dawkins does not live his life with that assumption.
Yeah.
Because he cries foul when someone discriminates against people or whatever. He does have a moral compass.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's no God,
right,
there is no morality, there's no meaning, there's no anything. I think when you got like in the story, the Big Al, One thing I love about that story is that what you just told is that when you get to the end of your life, a lot the you think, man, that, like when you're faced with your own mortality, it does force you to start asking different questions.
Yep.
I think about this. I wanted to read this in Psalms 90. I thought,
by the way, he wasn't an old man. 12, 15 years after I was converted.
So he would have been 40s.
Yeah.
Early 40s.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a big man. He had a heart.
He was young.
Yeah.
So he faced his own mortality, and then he's like, okay, there's got to be more, which I would agree there is more. But I've been reading this psalm to myself every day for the last week, and I want to read this second half of it, Psalms 90.
Hang on. Before you do that, let's take another break.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
This is in Psalms 90, the second half, verse 12. It said, the first part of this is just asking for the Lord to satisfy us before the sun comes up and before our hearts forget that God is good. Just satisfy us, Lord. Then he says this in verse 12. So teach us to number our days. Teach us to number our days. I think he's saying you need to remember that you're finite. Good.
What was that verse?
Psalms 90, verse 12. Okay. You need to remember
your
that
days are numbered.
They are numbered. Phil, if I got in Phil's truck last time I was here, the first thing out of your mouth, Phil, which most people think is morbid, I love it. He goes, no context, by the way. Phil just goes, well, that was the fastest 74 years I've or 76 years I've ever experienced. It's like, look, give me more context. But what you were doing, and you do this a lot, it's like, it's a liturgy that you're just numbering your days, and here's why: that we may present to you, to God, a heart of wisdom.
Yep.
The way you're going to get the fear.
Is this Moses' psalm?
That's a good question. God's eternity and man. I don't know. That is a good.
Go ahead, make your point.
It's Psalms 90. We'll look that up, but. The fear of the Lord, that's the message of the Psalms, is the beginning of wisdom.
Yeah, this is a prayer of Moses.
It's prayer of Moses.
Yeah, I remember this now. Okay.
Do return, O Lord, because it pushes us into a longing for God, right, when you realize how quick this is moving by. So do return, O Lord, how long will it be? And be sorry for your servants. O satisfy us in the morning with your loving kindness, that we may sing for joy and be glad all of our days. Make us glad according to the days that you have afflicted us. After the years we have seen evil, and we've seen some evil, let your work appear before your servants. We want to see God's kingdom here, right?
Yep.
And your majesty to their children. Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us and confirm for us the work of our hands. We want our work to be meaningful. Yes, confirm the work of our hands. So I think that's kind of the thrust of this film is like you see this thing happening, but it's like there's meaning, there's context, and what we're doing here, it does matter.
Yeah. I remember I told yesterday, Dad, so when I told that story about the guys that came and then left, I said that you had started to surround yourself with the new set of friends, with now brothers.
Yep.
And so I mentioned a few of them, and most all of them have, you know, gone to the other side to wait on us. Corbett, Gilbert, you know, and Big Boy Jennings. And I thought about Doyle. He got had a brain tumor, and he's probably in his 60s maybe when he got it. And so it began to affect him because it was tapping into parts of his brain. So he'd be like super emotional. He couldn't hardly keep from crying. But I remember when I went and visited him in the hospital, just show you the difference about when a believer gets to that point, because he knew he was dying. And he kept quoting this psalm, that certain number of days. And he had written out this whole thing, a certain number of days.
Wow.
And he kept saying, you know, I mean, of course I would love to spend more time because, you know, wife, my kids and all that. He said, but God gave me a certain number of days. And I served him and I loved him. And so how could I say now at the end that this is not exactly what God wanted for me? And I just thought, man, for a guy that's dying with a brain tumor, I mean, that's a pretty good take on being a son of the Almighty.
You watch this film, and he got my granny and Paul, your parents, they're gone.
Yep.
My mom, one of the characters, she's gone. They're gone from here.
Yeah.
You got Big Al, no longer with us.
Yep.
You got Bill Smith, no longer with us.
Judy,
no longer with us. I said, there's a pattern here. You know, yep. There's a pattern. But I think that I'm pushing back for, in a weird way, when I could. And I think this is the kingdom life and the spirit living in us that teaches us that for me, when I count my days and I consider my mortality, I mean, yeah, it stings a little bit, but it also testifies that there has got to be more.
Yeah. Yep. It's got to where now every time I wake up in the morning, I'm like, whoa, I'm shocked that I'm still here. With the movie coming and everybody else has passed on but me, and they're going to do a story. I said, I'm next.
Well, you know, there were seven.
No, get in line.
there were seven siblings.
I have said the older I get and the more I realize at how temporary life is. James, you know, said it's just like a little mist. Yep. Comes up and gone.
Vapor.
Yeah.
I'm looking at that. I'm like, man. And to actually see a movie about yourself when you were a boy.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah. I mean, right. Because it's stretched out over such a long time.
It all happened so fast.
Yeah. And I thought about Bill Smith, who's obviously, there's an actor that plays him in the movie. And you told me you spent a lot of time with him because you really wanted that to be right. Because, I mean, Bill, I mean, your mom getting Bill to then ultimately have the opportunity to share Jesus with Dad was such a pivotal point, not just in the story, but obviously all of our lives.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that he would later be our mentor, and, you know, we were able to sit at his feet for many years and learn. And also, you know, I worked alongside him for 22 years. So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that excites me.
You probably went on your computer and when we got into Hebrews and probably printed off Bill Smith's Hebrew notes. When we started Hebrews, I was like, man, I got to find that notebook.
That's right.
Because Bill taught us the book of Hebrews.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I have a lot of his stuff. He allowed me to have access to all of his notes and stuff once he was gone, and I really appreciate that. I mean, because I do. I mean, he taught me. And the notes, you're right, the notes we're doing here, I taught a Sunday morning 25 years ago. So, I mean, you know, that's how long back we go with this study. But, yeah, I'm excited about it, Zach. And look, Unashamed Nation, I mean, you guys are going to help us make this thing happen or not in terms of, you know, supporting it and watching it. So, I really, you know, word of mouth is what has made this podcast so great. And when I was going around Kansas, then I was in New York, then I was in D.C. last week, and I just kept meeting person after person, a lot of young people, but also some older couples, and just, we love your podcast. We're listening to the podcast. I never miss a podcast. I mean, just over and over and over. So I know our nation is growing because of you guys, not only supporting it, but then you're telling other people, and that's really how you make something successful. So we will encourage you to do that, especially when we get closer to
releasing
the film. I mean, you guys will be the one. So I want to mention one other thing before we get back to Hebrews. Because we talked about last time the idea of prophecy in those first four verses and this idea about who Jesus is. But I want to bounce this off of before we get to the text. This was something, I told you I had this thing yesterday in my sermon about cracked pots. You know, that was my takeoff. So I had three people that in their time were labeled as crackpots, but it turns out they were brilliant and just ahead of their time, which happens a lot, right? So Galileo was one of them. He said the world didn't revolve around Earth as everybody thought it was, but actually it revolved around the sun. But in his day, They thought he was a kook, and he was even kicked out of the church.
Yeah, they called him a heretic.
He was a heretic, which we talked about that earlier.
Be careful about the heretic.
And he was right on target. Let's take a break. The other one I mentioned, and then I said, so we're crackpots. So what we say now is that life doesn't revolve around us, but it revolves around the sun, S-O-N. And therefore, people say, what? You're a kook, right?
Yeah, you're crazy.
But we're ahead of our time. So Georges Lemay, he was the one, he was a like a some kind of a bishop or something. I forgot his background. But he's the one that expanded on Einstein's theory and said that the universe is expanding, which meant, of course, there had to be a singularity beginning. And so, and again, in his day, everybody says, kook, crackpot, no way. But it turns out he was exactly right. And so what has been called the Big Bang, we say God created the heavens and the earth. He was the bang.
The reason why they call it a Big Bang is because they're trying to avoid the universe had a beginning. Because what's happened here is if you know who Stephen Hawking is, who wrote Brief History of Time. So he wrote this book, and he's basically making the case for how Einstein's and what this guy you just mentioned, along with Edmund Hubble, who had the Hubble telescope.
Yep.
So that was the big move, right? So
yeah.
When this telescope comes out, they're looking at the planets, and they notice that there's a every time he observes the planets, they become increasingly more red. Well, if you know anything about light waves, if a light's coming towards you, like the closer a light is, it gets what color? It gets brighter. It gets whiter.
Whiter, yeah.
As it moves away from you, think about like tail lights, or if you see a light that's way off, it kind of has like a reddish glow to it. Because the further, what's happening is the light wave is actually being like it's not as sharp. The frequency is not as sharp. It's more bent. Oh, it's longer
right.
waves instead of short. Shorter waves equals brighter light. Longer waves equal redder. And so they're looking at this, and they're like, he's like, wait a second. It looks like that the universe is actually, these planets are moving away from us.
Expanding.
It's expanding. And no big deal, right? Oh, it's a huge deal. Because if it's expanding, then what that means is if you go back in time, then it's shrinking. If we could hit rewind on the VCR of the recorder of the universe, then it's actually shrinking. And they've shown this mathematically, that it shrinks to a point of infinite density to where nothing exists.
Yep.
And then what Stephen Hawking does, he's put this in his book, he gives this whole case for it. And I think I know what page this is on, which is crazy. I think it's on page 59. But he said he called it the standard model of physics. He said that if the standard model of physics is correct, I forget how he actually says it, but it's something like this. He said it smacks of divine intervention. He said, in other words, there must be a God. And he said,
but he was an atheist, right?
He died an atheist.
Yeah.
And he said, therefore, this is the line you got to keep in mind. He said, therefore, the goal of modern physics is to disprove what we've already proven, because we know God can't exist.
Right.
I mean, that's something.
It's something.
But you think about the universe itself had a beginning, and not only does it have a beginning, the standard model of physics, what it tells us is that it began to exist out of nothing, ex nihilo, out of nothing. So it's hard for us to imagine nothing, but nothing exists, nothing, not even like empty space, like nothing exists.
Right.
And then in a moment, everything exists.
Yep.
And they're like, I've never heard anything like that. Well, you go to Genesis chapter 1,
it
and it says, in the beginning was the, Genesis chapter
God created the heavens and the earth.
Yeah, so the word create there comes from a Hebrew word. The Hebrew word is bachra, which you say it kind of the back of your throat. It's B-A-R-A. And so what is that word? That word in Hebrew, it's not used much in Scripture, but it means create, not just create, because I can create this table, but this table is made out of wood. The word in Hebrew in Genesis 1, the word for create means to create out of nothing. It's what he's saying there is there was nothing, and then God made something. God creates out of nothing. So in 1956, the Catholic Church, and this is another thing.
You have to have something, or you don't get something.
Exactly.
you
So nothing
if
can.
There was nothing. How does nothing explode and all of a sudden you see all this matter? You say, had to be something before that.
So we're so what we're being told is that we're idiots because we believe that, that something came from something instead of something came from nothing.
That's right.
I say, no, you idiots, you don't understand that something comes from nothing. We're like, that doesn't make any sense.
That's right.
And they're like, oh, you're just not smart enough. No. It's an impossibility, right? So it's like the
nothing can explode.
It's in Romans 1. It's God, the creation. Is God has revealed himself through right. creation. These are things that you can take an astrophysicist like
Ross, Hugh Ross.
Not Hugh Ross. I was thinking the one I was just talking about.
Hawking.
Or you can take some redneck down here on the river, and we're all going to come to the same conclusion. Mm-hmm. If this thing just happened out of nothing, it smacks of divine intervention.
Yeah.
Anybody, you don't have to have any intelligence to understand that something must come from something. And what the biblical account is that something comes from someone.
Well, and what I love about Hawking was at least in his belief system, and let's face it, atheism is its own belief system. It's its own religion, really. It's like some of this stuff on the left now. It becomes a religion. And he's saying, my belief system won't allow me to embrace a God, but everything I know as an astrophysicist seems to point that there's something.
Yeah, and we're talking about kind of the bigness of it all, you know, looking at the expanding universe, but even when you shrink it down and you say, let's look at the finite mm-hmm. information, and or the minute information, that the smallness of what's inside your cells,
yeah.
your DNA.
What all's happening there?
And you see the information in there. It's like, well, I heard this guy speak this week, Dr. Rice, and he said, you know, you walk on the beach and you see your name written on the beach in the sand. You're not going to say, look what the waves did. Wow. You're going to say, somebody wrote that. Why? Because there's information there.
That's right.
And so when there's information, even the big and the small gods in it all, and we say, well, what's this got to do with Hebrews? Because I was just asking myself that question. I looked down and said, I remember this verse right here. Actually,
it has a lot to do with
it. It has a lot to do with Hebrews, doesn't it?
You know, the first thing out of the Hebrew writer's mouth was the, you know, in these last days, he's spoken to us by his son, that Jesus. So Jesus is put into play. Then he starts talking about the angelic beings. So before you read, Al, the angelic beings,
right.
Go back to the birth of Jesus.
Hang on before you read that. Let's take our last break. All right.
There were shepherds living out in the field. This is just prior to the birth of Jesus, keeping watch over their flocks at night. Enter the angels. Watch this. An angel of the Lord appeared to them, because Jesus was made a little lower than the angels. Watch. And the glory of the Lord shone around them. They were terrified. It scared the daylights out of them. But the angel said to them, do not be afraid. I bring you good news of joy, of great joy, that there will be for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. Now, these are angels giving the information of what's going down. Mm. He is Christ the Lord, the Messiah. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in clothes and lying in a manger. Suddenly, because you're just fixing to read about the difference between Jesus and the angelic beings, suddenly, and the atheists of the world would scoff at what I'm reading here. But I read it and say, huh. Suddenly, a great company of the heavenly host appeared with the angel. You're like, there's a lot of beings running around out there that you can't see them. He's going to get over, as you go through Hebrews, and said, some of them are just for you to help you out. They're there all the time. It's a bunch of them. A heavenly host appeared with the angel, praising God and saying, glory to God in the highest. This is Hebrews 1. And on earth, peace to men. on whom his favor rests. When the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, let's go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about. I mean, you just put that, when it happened, when you read the book of Hebrews, you say, the angels were there.
Oh, yeah.
But Jesus wasn't. And Jesus is bigger than the angels will ever be.
Right.
So the comparison, he met his birth, a mighty throng of these beings, which is kind of scary to think about.
Well, you know,
scared the daylights out of them, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, every encounter was always like that. It's not like kind of how it's imagined now in modern times. It was a frightening.
I think we kind of overlooked the fact of what went down there, but you've got the cosmos full of these angelic beings, and they are appearing by the no telling how many thousands of them, singing praises to God, and it's all about Jesus. It was a big thing.
Well, and what an observation I made.
God becoming flesh. It was a big one.
Well, right. And I made an observation just from looking through the scriptures. Not only was it his birth, you remember when he was tempted in the desert?
Yeah.
Who came to him to minister to him after he went through that with Satan? An angel. Then when he was getting ready to be crucified, I mean, he was in the garden, he was angels came to minister to him.
You got a pecking order that's unfolding. Hebrews 1:14, it doesn't take him long. By the way, he talks about the cosmos and what's going to happen to it. God created these. He said, what's going to happen? It's going to wear out and be gone in a roar. Gone. Peter talked about it. But here, these people running around now saying they're going to save the planet. Not hardly. They better get their eyes on Jesus so they can be saved, because the planet is fixing to go.
It's not going to be up to
and
us.
All the in the middle of all that, are not all angels, all of them, ministering spirits sent to serve those who will inherit salvation?
Yeah.
They're there on our behalf.
That's exactly right.
Some of the things happen weird, you know, you don't know what's going on.
Let me read this.
I don't think we
I want to read this whole section, Dad, and then we'll, because we're running out of time and we can talk about more in the overtime. So it starts in verse 4. Remember, we set the whole thing that Christ is superior over prophecy. And then it gets to verse 4 and it says, so he became as much superior to the angels as the name he has inherited is superior to theirs. So it's even now over the angels.
Yep.
For to which of the angels did God ever say, and now he's going to have this, all these quotes are Old Testament prophecies. You are my son. Today I become your father. That's the one from Psalm. Or again, I will be his father and he will be my son. And again, verse 6, when God brings his firstborn into the world, God in flesh,
yep,
he says, let all God's angels worship him. Which
that's
is
my
what,
point.
Which is what you just read. In speaking of the angels, he says he makes his angels winds, his servants flames of fire.
Which you would think you need to bow down to them because of that, but you got a bigger one on the premises than them.
Exactly. But about the Son, he says, your throne, O God, will last forever and ever, and righteousness will be the scepter of your kingdom. You have loved righteousness and hated wickedness. Therefore, God, your God, has set you above your companions,
yep,
by anointing you with the oil of joy. That's another Psalm quote. So, Jack, you were talking about the Psalms. This is all about Jesus. He also says, verse 10, in the beginning, O Lord, you laid the foundations of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you remain. They will all wear out like garment. You will roll them up like a robe, and like a garment they will be changed. But you remain the same, and your years will never end. By the way, that was the Psalm 102. That was written thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
How did they know? How did the psalmist know all that?
Yeah. I mean, how did they know?
We're way ahead of.
And to give a little context to what we're doing here, because now we're, or not us, but the Hebrew writers make them the claim of Christ. And as Phil was talking about the fierce and the fear that you would feel if you actually encountered an angel, you'd be like, uh-oh, these are pretty pretty spectacular beings.
But people usually fell out, and it said they became frozen and terrified in fear. That's when the encounters they were having in the scriptures, that it was that kind of stuff.
Oh, it scared them. To one of my angels to calm down.
Yeah, easy.
So you think, what we're trying to do here, if you're listening, is we're trying to elevate your view of angels, right? But then in Psalms 8, this is what the psalmist says. He talks about the majesty and the splendor of the Lord, but then he switches and he kind of moves into the incarnation of the Son that's coming. He says, "And the Son of Man, what is man?" Verse 4, that you thought of him. What is man that you take thought of him, and the Son of Man that you care for him? Listen to verse 5. Yet you have made him a little lower than God, and crown him with glory. One translation says a little lower than the angels, and in Hebrews 2, it says you've made him lower than the angels. And so I think about this, Jesus was made lower when he became, he was made lower than the angels. What does that even mean? And now he's being exalted above not just the angels. I mean, he's being exalted above all things.
All things.
Everything.
And remember, the key to it is, because he was already there as God, but when he became a human being, he said about himself, he lowered himself because he constricted an eternal God into a human body.
Plus, anybody watching would say, this is never going to work.
Right. Nobody would ever think this would be the way to save mankind, which is why it was such a rope-a-dope on Satan. That's he never saw it coming. And you know he had to wonder, why is he becoming one of them? Because he's been down here messing with humans.
That's not going to save the world.
From the beginning. So it was a divine rope-a-dope to save mankind, which is really powerful. So I just thought that was really good. So we read this whole section. Let me read the last two verses, and then we get to overtime, and we'll talk a little bit more about angels. To which of the angels, verse 13, did God ever say, here's another Psalm quote, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet? In other words, the rhetorical answer to all those questions is none. The angels are powerful. They're living another realm, but they can't save sin.
Now, real quick before we cut out too, is Colossians 2, which we went into a few weeks ago. You remember what their sin was? One of their sins was they were worshiping angels.
That's
they,
right.
They, so we want to lift up angels, but only because we want to tell you Jesus is better.
That's right.
Yeah, what they did and Paul was getting on to them for in Colossians is you're taking these ministering spirits, these things of God that are meant to point to Him, and you're worshiping those things instead of the one who they're pointing you to.
And so we'll in the overtime, we're going to get to some of the why of that, Zach, especially in ancient times, why that would happen. And I think still does even today. So we'll if you want to go check out overtime, blazetv.com/unashamed is where you go to sign up. And we'll see you on the other side.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.